For April 22nd, 2024, it's the Overthinking It Podcast, episode 825. Are you for sale? Welcome to Overthinking It, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny it probably doesn't deserve. The overthinkers are your smart, funny friends from the internet. We're never happier than when we are, I have one thing that I talk about in the show, and Pete and Mark have another thing that they talk about in the show, but it turns out that the two things are thematically related by the end of the episode, and that's how every episode of the Overthinking It podcast works. I'm Matt Rather. I'm joined by the dynamic duo who have the B plot, but it's not really a B plot. It's like the A prime plot. It's A prime one, Peter Fenzel. Hello, Pete.
Hey, Matt, how's it going?
It's going very, very well. And Mark Lee is here with us. A prime two. Welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm sitting in the front seat this time. And that's just a minor detail. It's totally inconsequential to what the show is actually about.
But it's not the it was good. Yeah, guys, I don't know if you know, but there is this television show called Bluey, which we've never done an episode on before. We've never, and so for the first time, I think we need to do an episode about this television show Bluey. Guys, this thing is blowing my mind. I don't know.
For real life, Matt? For real life? That's a catch up from the show, by the way. I don't know how much of it you've seen, if you can recognize all the catchphrases, but I will be sprinkling them in here for all the Bluey superfans, my fellow Bluey superfans out there. For real life, Matt?
So I listened to it. I listened to the episode that you guys did about Bluey while I was away one time, and that was it was delightful, and it made me want to watch it. And then I don't really have a ton of room for children's television in my life at the present moment. But then you suggested that we do this particular episode because apparently Bluey release day, I guess when it's like four times the length of a normal episode, it's a movie. So they released the Bluey movie.
Blues Your Illusion double album is what it is.
I was led to follow these Blues clues to see the mystery unfold in front of me. It was really it was really good. It lived up to it's funny. It was what I expected, having listened to your episode in which you described the show, which I think is a credit to you, and it was better in ways. Like the actual experience of it transcended just what the description of it would be, which is a credit to the show. So yeah, it was particularly wonderful. Mark, will you just I don't know where we start with it, but can you explain the plot of the episode that we are taking as our subject matter today?
I'll try to do it justice in a fairly short order here, and I'm sure we'll come up and fill in a lot of details, are there details? There's so many details. For the very, very uninitiated, right, Bluey is a show about a family of cartoon dogs, right, a mom, a dad, and daughters about age 7 and 5, but about what age they are is actually kind of relevant. We'll maybe get to that here. And as you probably heard, right, the show is very much as much for adults as it is for children. Right, this is operating at a totally different level than the typical like Paw Patrol level stuff that is aimed at children and is pretty mindless. This is extremely, extremely thought out. So two things are happening. Right, the Heeler family has their house on the market. They're going to move, and people are varying levels of sad or accepting about it. And another thing happening is that a immediate family member is getting married in the backyard of the house before they move out. Plot A is the family moving out, but at the end of it, not moving out and kind of staying in their community. And plot B is the marriage almost getting called off because men are bad communicators, as we are all aware. And it's very much the case in this particular episode.
I think it's rich, yeah. Mark, for the three of us to say that men are bad communicators, because we have nearly 1,000 hours of us communicating so hard. We are communicating right at you, right in your ear.
No artifice. It's completely authentic. Like every word coming out of here is
all about quantity over quality. How many words do you say to your spouse every day? Make it tens of thousands.
I just put, you know, on the Sonos, I just put, you know, old Overthinking It podcasts in a loop so that I can constantly be filling the air with my talking.
Yeah, it makes for a happy household. What else makes for a happy household? Apparently, like, community staying together, right? So just to round that piece out there, the couple who's were about to call off their wedding at the last minute, make amends, and instead of moving away, which was the cause for of the tension between the soon-to-be married couple, they decided that they're staying. So everybody decides to stay. So. And the other meta piece that's important to this, and then I'll toss it to Pete to kind of fill in some of the details and maybe give us a Downton Abbey moment. The meta aspect of this as well is that towards the end of this series' third season, there are a lot of rumors swirling about, is the show ending? Particularly, like, can the show, and its very particular nature and well-thought-out approach, can this be sustained beyond the three seasons they put out? I think the creators have also been pretty... upfront about how they're feeling some burnout and, you know, like, just kind of general sense of doubt about the future of the show. So what, you know, there was kind of one path where you could see where they move and kind of the status quo that, typically supports a show like this is completely upended and blown up and like, okay, that's the end of it. But no, they kind of, there is a sense of return. A literal sense of return, because like they're they've moved out of the house, like the moving truck has like taken all the boxes away, and then through a variety of events, including a butterfly flapping its wings, literally, they kind of move back into the house, and it turns out nope, they're not moving, they're not leaving behind all their wonderful friends and family and relatives and things like that. The community stays together. The Healer family remains in Brisbane along with their friends, and all is right in the world. Or is it?
Would you say that the Healer family are themselves the one who needed healing?
Yes. In fact, that was very much the case.
Yeah. So they got totally screwed on the closing costs, though. That's the big takeaway of this for me, right?
You know? Absolutely.
Like, yeah. Well, but hold on a minute, because the buyer canceled, right?
Okay.
So if they were selling, and if they, well, of course, I don't know how this works in Australia, but wouldn't there be insurance already on it? Like if they've already closed, I guess it depends on how far things got. But if they already closed and the buyer backs out, then I would imagine the buyer would have to shoulder a bunch of the costs of canceling the transaction, right?
Seller? I'm sure that's in the boilerplate, whatever. Like,
things work very differently in Australia. You saw how when Chile got pulled over by a police officer and Will actually lead him with the law that the police officer completely and reacted professionally.
American
and also
cops
divulged like sensitive information about a different vehicle that he had pulled over.
American cops love it. They love it. Sure. If you're pulled over by an American cop, definitely get out your phone and show them the traffic code. They love that. They will take that with the good spirit that the constable in this episode of Bluey takes it. Absolutely. Pete, I'm sorry. So, I feel like I jumped it before.
It's all good fun. Cartoon dogs, man. Cartoon dogs. So Mark,
dogs.
I hear what you're saying. I felt like I want to ask you guys about this episode from my perspective, because I do feel like I saw it a bit differently than some people. I'm not sure. This is often the case, I think, when I watch entertainments like this, where to me there were two stories that were going on. Right? There's the story of the you didn't tell me or you didn't really get my approval. Before you didn't get my buy-in or my approval before you decided to move our family plot. There's that plot. And then there's the is this story going to have a happy ending or not plot, which felt not plot. I guess plot is the wrong word. Theme, right? Because Bluey is very thematic. But there's these stories, these thematic stories. And one is, oh, no, you know, my family has to move. And we're all upset about it because we didn't get a say in it. And then there's the, oh, is this story going to have a happy ending or not? And to me, they felt very separate. To me, they felt like separate stories that were overlaid on each other in an elegant way. I mean, I thought it was really beautifully done. But yeah, when you say, oh, everything is better, I didn't read it as everything is better. I felt like it definitely, although of course, you know, we also watched the surprise episode that dropped today, which really takes a lot of the tension out of it and tells you that everything is definitely better. But if you didn't watch the 8-minute episode of Surprise, which dropped after this, and you entertained the possibility that this was like the last episode of Bluey ever, possibly, then, you know, it ends in an ambiguous and also definitive way, depending on how you read it, right? Because the entire episode, they're saying like, well, you know, why do people like happy endings in stories? Well, it's because life is sad. Right. It's and so we want stories that give us happy endings, which is also sort of saying, well, the happy endings are false. Right. The happy endings are there as a comfort, which then makes me wonder about the level of reality vis-a-vis its own critiques that the main Bluey plotline is happening in. Like, is it a sort of magical ending that the dad pulls the for sale sign out of the ground like Samson, you know, busting the pillars of the Philistine temple, right? Sure. And bringing the roof down on all the revelers, right? Is this like,
and I was shocked that he was able to find the jawbone of an ass to use as a lever to use as a lever to
pry it out of to pry it out of the ground. Yes. To bash open the little box with the key in it that they left on the front door, right? As and then Bluey comes up to him with like a bowl full of wine and a rag in it or something. No. And it's then Bingo comes up with a bowl of soup and is like, "Oh, hey, eat this bowl of soup. Now I'm the king of the family." It's just all deep judges.
And then mom comes and they say, "Woman, why do you ask me this? I am about my father's business." And obviously they get punished for that because you can't be insolent like that to your
And they mom. Have to move to no. Babylon and they get thrown to the lions.
Let's focus, guys. Focus up. Bandit has clearly slipped the disc. He is going to the hospital with that move.
Yes.
He's a middle-aged man, and like, you know, like the aches and pains that he feels has been plot points for sure. No. In a previous episode, it showed him how he's working out with the help of his kids, and the doctor gave him a clean bill of health as well. So totally plausible. He had the strength of like three other dogs or men or people in his universe, and pulled the sign out, just filled with rage. And what, self-realization?
Well, okay. So what I guess,
to me, a little bit, the ending is the weakest part of the episode, right? Like, I really thought they were flying high with this, but it doesn't. I don't know. The idea that like, okay, we're going to have an episode that's about sort of anxiety about disruptions in family, right? And like understanding that we can't see the future and it may be, you know, things may be happy, they may be sad. They may be, you know, most likely a mix of both. And we can't know what's going to happen, but you know, sometimes we take a flyer on something like, "Hey, I have a new job and I'm going to, you know, we have to move in order to do the new job." It's good if you talk about this and you do this as a team, right? As like a family team rather than like one person sort of dictating or sort of visiting it on everybody else. But like still sometimes these things are I read a poem once with a line that's like in 2000 or something, and a line that stuck with me forever. And the line was, "Someone must enforce loss." And it just struck me as so true about life, right? Like someone must enforce loss, right? Like you got to take the new job. You got to move. And that this thing at the end where it's just like, we're not going to move after all. The buyers decided they didn't want our house. They wanted a house with a pool. And it was actually through a complicated series of events, Bluey who showed them the house with the pool because the lucky coin was stuck in the binocular, lookout point, telescope thing and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. Like that was good. I feel like at the end of Shakespeare in Love, Queen Elizabeth is asked how it will end. And she says, "With tears and a journey." And it strikes me that that's the only honest way to answer that question. And so this is, I don't know. I was ambivalent about the ending as you can tell. Were you guys like convinced by it? Are you happy that everything's okay? That Bluey's coming back for season four, another 58-minute episodes, or I don't know, did you have some of my misgivings about the end of this one?
Let me get it first and then I'll hand off to Pete. So first of all, correction, Matt, of course there were tears. were you not like just leaking by the end of this? Right? Holy crap! The music and everything coming together even before kind of like things really came to a head there at the end. Things got pretty leaky. So just put that out there, right? Okay, you know, we're all grown men here, and we all cry here. I at least admit that, and I feel pretty safe speaking on behalf of everyone else. Anyway, as for the ending itself, I had been going back and forth about this. Basically since I saw this episode this morning, and my first reaction was pretty similar to yours, Matt, and that like I thought the perfect place to end it would have been Bluey telling the story to Bingo to comfort her, as basically they either have to move, they have to and the loss must be enforced, right? Because that kind of just like ties up all the episode, all the themes of the story, and also like, you know, for the meta perspective as well. Allows them to plausibly end the show, but also gives an opening to keep it going and basically reboot it in a different city, you know, with different characters and everything. But at the end, I had to reconcile it with ultimately what it is. It is a show both, as you mentioned at the outset of this, both for children and for adults, right? Like the amount of disruption that children, like preschool and early elementary children, to tolerate for this like was not going to be at that level, and so this was their admirable attempt at bridging the divide, kind of hitting both of the straddling both of those lanes here and making something that worked. Like so I'm willing to say again, like I'm an adult, right? I think I would have preferred the more complex and bittersweet ending there, but I'm recognizing the show for what it is, and again, like, you know, lauding its accomplishment.
Pete, okay,
like what would you say?
So that's
like,
you're the Free Willy. Free Willy, famously, the trailer showed the whale escaping, and the rationale given by the marketers who did this was that children can't bear the anxiety of this kind of this tension and this uncertain outcome without knowing what's going to happen, without knowing that the whale is going to jump over the rock jetty and swim away to almost certain death. But the your explanation for what we saw is that So Pete, what do you think? How did you parse the ending of this?
So I parsed the ending as a third way, which is that I think that it happens. So first there's the quantum sense of there's the possibility that the story had an ending wherein the family moved away, and that ending was changed to make it a happy ending where the family stays, similar to how there's an ending where the marriage breaks up and then there's a happy ending where it doesn't. You joked that this is because men don't communicate. I feel like what the groom guy did was really bad. Like, that's a big deal to tell people that you're moving when you haven't even discussed it with the person that you're marrying.
Totally.
Like, that's like abuser behavior. That's like a huge red flag for me, right? I hear that, I'm like, whoa, right? I would have left too. Right. In that situation, that's like that's crazy. Right. Like and so is it the happy ending that she stays with this guy? Is it the happy ending that Bandit is taking advice from him on how to live his life? Oh, yeah, I'll just get another job. Will you really? Really? Like, where do you work that this is so easy for you to do all the time? Right. Like, oh, you have no responsibilities. You have no children. Well, you will. Right. And then what are you going to do?
And so Australia is an economic wonderland, Pete. I feel like, you know, you're not.
That's probably true.
It's an economic wonderland.
You can always get spider bounties, just spearing those spiders, gigantic spiders, and bringing them into the center of town where the Duke will offer you ducats in exchange for their venom glands.
Absolutely.
Or something.
And if you find the spider that secretly controls the Catholic Church, then so much the better. You know, you're. Yeah.
So I kind of felt like it was like a happy ending for the kids, but for the adults, kind of a contrapasso where, I mean, I cried a lot during that ending. I cried when the shot behind, it's a shot as if there's an actual camera, but the shot that's over Bandit's head where he's looking up at the sign and it says for sale above him. And it just felt like this giant, entirely undeserved shaming of this man, right? It's like, are you for sale? I work, and it's like, your whole life is for sale. You would give up your whole life for money? And it's like, yeah, I need money to have a family. Like, this is not something that I – also, this is my job. This is, like, a lot of my life. Like, I thought it was very interesting that nowhere in the episode does anyone talk about this move that they're going to make in terms of anything other than the kids. Like, there's no, like – and again, and I'm not saying that parents don't make all their decisions for their kids, because they often do, right? But still – you know, like, did it mean anything to Bandit that he was going to get a new job? Was it something that he was looking forward to? It's a running joke in every sitcom, and especially in Bluey, that the dad just, like, doesn't get to do what he wants to do ever. Of course, also the mom, it's just assumed that she never gets to do whatever she wants to do ever, and the joke is that she's angry about it, which is one of the ways Bluey is atypical, because Chili is pretty relaxed about it. But the idea of, like, oh, you know, like, was this a meaningful career move that he's giving up? Like, oh, is he now going to be totally unemployed? Like, what's he going to do about his kids? And there's this thing of, like, he gets to be the hero for the 4-year-old. He gets to be the hero for the burnout brother-in-law who probably should be hitting the bricks, right? Like, and it's like, what's the consequences that he's going to have to deal with because of this? And there's, and it goes from this, like, you know, oh, you really need to prioritize family over your whatever thing you're doing that's so silly. As if his life starts when he, you know, his life only exists when he's home from work. He doesn't exist when he's working. The things that he does, it's part of that shift, I think you've talked about, Matt, towards thinking of yourself only as a consumer, right? Like the only reason that his job exists is to provide for his family, and particularly for his family's, like, leisure and enjoyment activities. And if they don't, and also they're socializing, and if they don't get to do, including him, if they don't get to do the things that they want to do because of it, then there's no point. But at the same time, like, why are they even doing this? And I mean, I'm ranting on this more than I should, but the point being that, like,
Australia has a European style social safety net, right? I think,
other than the spiders that are coming for you at all times.
Yeah,
all
sure.
I know is that there's just giant predators that have crawled
social,
out of the slime.
Yeah, exactly. I guess the social safety net in Australia is actually a spider web. You know, it's that kind of net, you know.
And so, like, maybe it's not so desperate. Maybe it's like, yeah, now we have no health insurance. Maybe this is my American showing, right? Like, you're going to lose your house. You're going to have no health insurance. You're never going to be able to afford another place to live. Your wife's going to leave you. This is all going to fall apart. And it's going to be because you did a favor to a 4-year-old child.
Yeah, but Pete,
who really should not be in charge of this decision.
A little bit, like, you're asking the horse's names a little bit with this story, aren't you? Right, like that's a actually we should talk about the in order to cope with the loss, the moving away. Their teacher at school reads Bluey and class a story that we can talk about, the story of the lost horse that, you know, has been told and retold a bunch of times. And the kids, of course, completely, they hear all the words, but none of the meaning. They completely miss the point of the story and ask, like, what was the name of the horse? Oh, if it was a black horse, I'd name it Midnight. And if it was a white horse, I'd name it Cotton Ball. And if it was a pink horse, I'd name it Cotton Candy Ball. And if it was a green horse, I'd name it Frog. Even though it was a horse, I'd be like, this is my horse, Frog. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm riffing on this a little bit, but like it's actually wonderful. It's one of the things I didn't totally expect, how accurate the concerns of the kids were, and their kind of their consciousness, how it honors sort of their consciousness, in terms of what their concerns really are and sort of how their minds work, how their mind sees on things that the adults would consider irrelevant, but that are really, really very important to the kids. So but Pete, I feel like you're asking, I just assumed that this took place in a world where because he didn't, I don't know, because he didn't finish the move, like his job was there, you know, he needed to like show up at the one job for the other job to be totally gone, you know, or because it's not, I mean, the family dynamics are the point of the show, right? Not the economic realities of actually trying to look for work as stevedore?
He's an archaeologist.
Stevedore? It's like season 2 of The Wire.
He's an archaeologist. Get this. Really? Get this. He's an archaeologist, and
like Chili Ross.
is in airport security.
Ross, a paleontologist.
Yeah, because they're dogs, and they're, what are they good at? Digging up bones and smelling, right?
So is he leaving like a tenure? Is he abandoning a tenure track position at like a major Australian university?
Yeah, and he was going to join.
That's crazy.
He was going.
I don't even know if Australia has tenure. They just probably have jobs. Yeah, that's just probably they're probably fine all the time. They have nothing to worry about. Everywhere else in the world is better than nobody has.
They're always the dinosaur excavation gigs. Maybe a paleontologist actually. There are always digs happening. You just have to traverse a huge field of enormous spiders.
He was going to Cairns to work as a valet parker at a hotel in that sort of resort city. And ironically, it paid four times what his job as an academic paid. That's parking cars at the resort. But I guess I just assumed you are a better overthinker than I, Pete, because you are cashing out all of the nuances of it.
I always think I didn't. Again, I still haven't watched Life of Pi because I still don't believe that the tiger doesn't eat that kid. It's worst case scenario children are at risk.
My guy, Pete. It doesn't matter if the tiger doesn't eat the kid on screen. You and I know. We both know the tiger eats the freaking kid. That's the story of the Life of Pi. Like we know that it is known. It is known.
So to introduce another angle on this, right, which is the Downton Abbey moment with cup holders, right? Where Bluey gets to ride in the front seat of the car, right? Because there's nowhere else for her to ride. And she's so excited. And this goes from being like, this is the worst day ever to this is the best day ever because she gets to ride in the front seat of the car. And then they have their juice, right? And Bluey has a cup holder to put her juice in. But in the back, the kiddos don't have cup holders. And they try to put their juice down and the juice spills all over the place. And what that said to me in terms of the themes of the episode are there's a big difference in how happy you can be with the same situation if you are in control of it or if you're not. And so there we have two situations that are very similar in that there are these two moves, and in one of them, it's two adults, and one of them is in control and has made this decision to move, and the other one is not in control and is very upset. And they're both in the front seat, right? Well, I guess they should both be in the front seat because they're both adults, right? But the bride is in the back seat because she's been put in the back seat by the groom who has not involved her in the conversations about her own life. And here in this other situation, right, we also, they're going to move. And not everybody is in control of it. Really, only Bandit seems to be in control of it. Chili is more in control of it than, I guess, is it her sister is Frisky? The one who's getting married?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. But she's more in control of it because she knows about it and she's like approved of it. But she doesn't really want to do it. And you get the sense that she hasn't really engaged in a really authentic personal conversation about it.
Quick correction. They're not actually sisters.
Oh, they're not sisters. Okay.
Rad is Bandit's brother and Chili is.
I read it as Frisky and Chili were sisters because Rad is such a douche. I didn't believe that he would be related to one of the main characters. That explains why everyone's so willing to forgive him for being so toxic.
This is, again, another thing, Pete. I was like, I saw him show up and I was like, oh, look at his hair. That guy is rad. He's rad.
Yeah, there you go.
He can do whatever he wants. Move me to the west coast of Australia, rad.
But there's an asymmetry when it's children, because the children aren't involved in the decisions. The children, legally and practically speaking, cannot sit in the front seat of the car, right? They have to sit in the back seat of the car. And children have to go through all these experiences where their lives are changed and they have no control of it. And even if it turns out to be something that they would like, even if, let's see, it turns out to be something good, because they're not in control of it, that's very distressing. And I think as a parent, I have a lot of empathy and I would assume, Mark, you probably do too, for when our children feel powerless. When, like, we have to make a decision, the kid doesn't get to make the decision, the kid gets upset about it, the kid wants to make a different decision, and it's like, I get it, kid, this isn't fair, and it stinks that it's not fair for you, but there are no cup holders in the back seat. right? Like if I were to, for some reason, give this decision to you, it would spill all over the place.
Right.
Right. Like,
but I think Pete, the episode, I think, has a symbolic language for talking about this. Like this, yeah. This is this is a thing that strikes me. Like when I don't know, I just watching this, I had all kinds of like, flashbacks to childhood, like riding in the front seat was a very big one. And so I don't know. I feel like I got activated emotionally by this in a way that I hadn't been expecting to. And I have a question for you guys about that that I want to stick a pin in. But the episode shows, right, that afterwards mom's name is Chili, right? Chili is going to, stops the car, and cleans it up. Right. And it struck me that this is symbolically about sort of repairing some of those rifts, because it's accurate, right? That like someone has to enforce laws, and very often like that's a parent's job and you have to do it kind of on your kid, you know, like
all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Every hour of every day. Right,
100%. And there is that's a great disjunction. I mean, it's a great like kind of emotional rupture, and like, you know, should you know, when the day comes for me, like, goodness gracious, I hope I have the patience and the grace to kind of have that negative capability to like sustain the two thoughts at the time that like, no, yes, absolutely, this limit is non-negotiable, and like I 100% feel your, you know, I'm here for your terror or your, you know, sadness or your, you know, loss or grief or whatever, around it. Grief, probably. Grief is the kind of the word for the emotional constellation where you, cope with your life not being what you assumed. A big rupture or change. So the mom, like, stops the car and cleans up the spilled watermelon juice. And to me, this is like, this is about actually, this is a really good moment of parenting, a very attuned parenting, which is that like the bad move would have been to,
kid, you get splashed with watermelon juice all the time. Eh? Yeah, life is hard, isn't it?
Sorry, I have a terrible Australian accent. It's not good at all.
Joe Pesci is now a mom.
Hey, kid, forget about it. You get splashed with watermelon juice. All my accents end up Russian at the end.
Kid, you say it. Am I spicy to you? Is that, am I a spicy pepper to you?
You are splashed with watermelon juice, Chelovek. That's the, they all end up Russian. But
hey, I won't stand for this Wario original. Right, so
that's
Wario. It's
I'm a Wario. I'm gonna splash the watermelon juice on you. Hey, you get splashed in the face with watermelon juice. It's cold and it turns out to be sticky. It's uncomfortable and your clothes are ruined and they're stained forever and that. But no, like the mom stops the, I was watching this with Christina and she made the observation that like this mother has the patience of Job, you know?
This is oft observed about the parents employee. Seemingly unending patience.
Yeah, 100%. They are like, they've had their coffee, you know what I mean? They've like, they've done a brief like 20-minute meditation app, you know? They like have no pressing concerns. They are center, you know, like they've done a yoga warm-up. I mean, like they are in their body.
I know you're spitballing here, Matt, but there is actually an episode where like, you don't see Chili like lose it or anything like that, but she basically just says, kids, family, I just need 20 minutes. and she gets her 20 minutes. I mean, like, to be clear, Bandit is driven crazy by the kids during this time, but Chili needed her 20 minutes and she got her 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what you gotta tag team it, right? Like it's too much for just one. But the,
and by the way, yes, salute to all the single moms and dads out there who against all odds and logic and everything else make it work.
Bro, I was raised by one. Like I feel the challenges daily in my mind, in the things that trigger
me.
You got
some watermelon juice on you, Matt? Is that what you're saying?
I am drenched. I am more watermelon juice than man at this point.
But the I don't know, like, so Pete, for me, that was the thing that I think you're absolutely right about, that moment in, like, I don't know, in testing out the front seat, Bluey has kind of the affordances of some like adult help, but the kids in the backseat don't get splashed with watermelon juice. But the mom is there to deal with it and help. It's a very subtle show. I'm surprised that this is our first episode ever discussing it, because guys. So let me ask y'all something. Like, you touched on this briefly. Is this for kids in name only, or is this something that kids actually demonstrably like, right? Because it is very subtle, and it doesn't necessarily foreground. From the way that you talked about it, I thought in the episode that you did, I thought the concerns of the parents would be more in the background, you know, would be almost like floating, almost like Charlie Brown voices, you know, sort of floating atop the heads of the kids, or like Muppet Baby style, where you only see the legs of the nanny, where like you get a sense of what the concerns of the adult world are, but they filter in rather than being centered. But this, like, doesn't particularly privilege the kid's point of view or the parent's point of view. It sort of lets both exist. And I sort of wonder if this, like, makes it a TV show for kids and parents, but really for parents. So I don't know. Is there evidence in the field of kids being super into Bluey?
My kids don't like it. Sorry, go ahead.
That's what it's wondering.
Yeah, this is what we talked about in the hypothetical other podcast that we may or may not have recorded.
Yeah, you kind of did, and that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. This is a very difficult question to answer, because obviously, like, you know, I cannot, like, fully interrogate my 5-year-old or 3-year-old and ask them, like, why do you really like Bluey? Which parts of the show resonate most for you? From what I can tell, okay, so here's just like a specific thing, right? Like that last episode, The Sign, as you said, like, foregrounds a lot of adult stuff, right? And the kid stuff is there, but by no means is it front and center. They still enjoyed it, right? Like, how much they understood of the plot and the tensions involved, I'm honestly not sure. I mean, like, you know, there were shenanigans, a lot of shenanigans with the younger children, that were just, like, kind of viscerally entertaining to see. And, like, there was also the tension and release of sad Bingo, particularly at the end, and how she's comforted, which I'm pretty sure resonated with my kids. But beyond that, kind of thinking of the broader oeuvre for the show, it provides enough just kind of, like, sensation and silliness to be entertaining at that level. And again, how they managed to juggle both of those things and balance those things is kind of amazing. Before I turn over to Pete, like, I'll just mention very specifically the presence of Chattermax. Right, this is a blinking you'll miss it kind of thing, and Pete, you might even be aware of this if you haven't seen, like, every single episode of this, right? There's an extremely annoying toy in this show, and his name is Chattermax. It's kind of like a Furby, but it basically is like, rah, 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 rah. It does that, and it plays annoying music and just, like, hops around and things like that, right? And the parents hate it. They're always trying to hide Chattermax. The kids are always trying to dig it out and play with it. It causes mischief, and Chattermax shows up in the dance party, which was, like, it's beyond a wonderful Easter egg. It has, by the way, this is to go on a bit of a tangent, like, it almost speaks to a certain, like, dream like quality to the end of the episode. I don't want to get into the whole, like, you know, this didn't really happen, this is all, it's like in Bandit's imagination, and he's like in a coma somewhere or something. No, that's not really what's going on. But more like, importantly, like, you know, the crazy toy shows up in a dance sequence, and the kids are dancing, and that's cool for kids. So, like, that's my kind of very long, complicated answer for, like, do my kids enjoy Bluey? It's like, yes, I'm pretty sure they do, and I have a rough sense of what it is that they like, but I have no idea how much of the kind of more complex emotional, especially the adult things, are resonating with them. I would suspect very little.
Mm. I mean, I've heard enough stories of people who got upset because they were moving and they saw this episode and their kids now demand that they not move. So there are some kids watching it. I mean, I don't know. I wonder what age kid it is for. That might be part of it too, because I don't really see a really young kid getting much out of this show because it doesn't have a lot of movement, right? Like it's kind of static a lot of the time. And not that it's like people want something that's super stimulating and twitchy, but like, you know, a lot of the shows have more action that I feel like, at least when my little kids have really responded to something, something has more, you know, more light and sound to it than Bluey generally does as a quantity thing. So I wonder whether it's like, oh, are these, you know, is this one show out of many? Because that's the other thing, is that my kids tend to like pick a show and watch a lot of it like in a row. I mean, and we also don't leave the TV on like for long stretches of time. So it's sort of like, but they have like sessions when they watch it. So like you watch a show after dinner every night. What show do you watch every night? They're never going to pick Bluey, like ever. But it's also because they sort of feel their show is precious to them and they want to watch their favorite show. But at the same time, it's like, well, when I go to my sister's house, they watch Bluey a lot, but they also like use the TV more often because they have more kids, more dogs. Dogs in the house. I wonder if families with dogs are more or less likely to watch Bluey. That's something I would be curious about. Whether there's like a dog thing, like because my son doesn't like dogs, so maybe he doesn't like Bluey because he doesn't like dogs. Although he likes Paw Patrol, so never mind. Scratch that hypothesis. I don't know. I don't know. I'll just tell you, Matt. Same thing I always tell you about anything about parenting. I will make up what I think is right. I have no idea. I am doing my best. Like maybe my kids would like Bluey. Maybe they don't. But it's interesting, right? It's because it does feel like the concerns of the parents and the themes and the thematic relationships are like a big share of the work that's going into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it does have music. It doesn't have a lot of singing. That's the other thing that my kids really like is a lot of singing. But that's also because they're my kids. So I don't know. Maybe a lot of kids are like, no, I don't really want more of this amateur hour karaoke, Elmo is a fish nonsense. Like, please give me something a little more grounded. It's like, yeah, that's
not my family. Since you mentioned songs, and this has come up multiple times, I think, on this podcast, actually, like the music in the show and how important it is. But at the beginning, did any of you caught on to the importance of, like, the adults are having they're doing wedding prep stuff, and multiple adults walk into the scene and they say, nah, 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 cat squad. Do you know what's going on with that?
No idea.
So there is a show within the show called Cat Squad, and it is it's a parody of a variety of things, including Paw Patrol. And the adults, like the bit, it's that's there's not a lot being signified there, but like, you know, there's like more sensational television within that universe. Their kids watch it and enjoy it, and the parents are annoyed by it, but they still find the music to be really catchy. Like there's a, again, like the layers going on the show is like, it was kind of remarkable, right? Where it acknowledges these different dynamics in play and basically saying, like, you know, that we know that this exists, but we are not that. So how about this other thing? It is kind of freaking a miracle.
Yeah,
like, I mean, this show exists and it works.
It is a miracle. I mean, of course, you can thank the Australian Broadcasting Corporation or whatever funds it down there. Although it is interesting that we watch on Disney Plus as well. But yeah, I mean, this big episode, though, does feel more for the parents than some of the other ones we watched for the other episode. I know you've watched the whole thing. There definitely are more of the episodes where the kids are just doing silly things. In particular, like Surprise, like the episode that came out today that we watched, where a lot of it is just the kids shooting Nerf balls at the dad, right? And it's like, ha ha, I jumped out from behind the door and shot you with a bunch of Nerf balls. And like, that's the game of the show. And that does all the things that I was telling you the show doesn't do, which is like, has a lot of action, has a lot of movement. I don't mean like guns. I just mean like things that are moving on screen other than feelings, which they, of course, like are only beginning to understand and parse, even though they have been having them, you know, intensely regardless. But yeah, you know, it's like, okay. And then, you know, they're playing with the tennis balls. The tennis ball is a baby. Like, that's funny. And then maybe we don't deal with the dad having the monologue to the baby whose head is falling off. And like, what sort of weird Freudian thing is happening in that scene with the dad talking to the baby whose head keeps falling off. I used to have nightmares. I had a recurring nightmare where I was holding a baby where its head fell off. It was the worst. That was right up there.
Wow. Oh, that's intense. Wait, this is before you became a father? And yes. Did it continue after into fatherhood?
No. Now I have nightmares about the sun exploding. It's can ratchet it up. You don't have nightmares about the thing you're actually scared of, right? You have nightmares about another thing that is like a symbol of the thing. So it's too close to home. I can't have nightmares about kids getting hurt. I would just assume it's reality. No, it has to be a dream state, right? There has to be some poetry to it. Thankfully, no. Now I'm going to have one tonight, and it's going to be the worst. Because that's just...
Let's podcast about that next week. No.
Yeah. But that was a much more typical Bluey episode. The surprise episode was much more like standard, straight down the middle. Like, the adults are experiencing the reality in one way. The kids are experiencing it in the other way. A lot of the episode is shenanigans that the kids are pulling on the adults. And it's fun, and it has music, and it has, like, a pacing to it, but it's a little relaxed. The Sign was more like intense and extended. Is this the only Bluey episode with a car chase that you can remember, Mark? It was funny that they gave it up so quickly because they had to pull over for the bathroom. But it was very exciting while it was happening. It's like the French Connection.
I want to say there's something else like that. But let me, since we've been talking about kind of the parent experience and kind of the finality of this, or the lack, or the certain finality of this, let me just spin out a kind of a, maybe this is a personal theory, but like I feel like this is relevant as well too, right? Which is the whole like championship season aspect of Bluey. Specifically, right, the show did debut in Australia in late 2018, but didn't debut in the United States until January 2020. And really picked up steam in 2020 when we were all stuck at home and watching all manners of television, which we wouldn't have watched normally. Right? Remember when we were all obsessed with Tiger King? Right? That happened. So there was that that moment. But also, like, what came out of that was Bluey. And so for a parent like myself, right, we've been on this very strange journey over these last few years, accompanied. Thankfully, by this delightful family of emotionally intelligent cartoon dogs. And as things have gotten finally back to quote unquote normal, it's almost as if, like, you know, this particular chapter of our lives and of the healers' lives has come to an ending of sorts. Now, again, like the sign and also, you know, the surprise episode afterwards, like, is very clearly to varying degrees of clarity, saying like the show is not over, it's going to continue, but like an ending of sorts did occur, and it felt like that for me. And I'm not saying this, say like, oh, because this episode, like, you know, I can finally move on from COVID. No, that's not how trauma works, guys. But like, I guess I wanted the question there is like, to what extent did you guys feel like this was an ending versus just like a very special episode of Bluey?
It felt like an ending a lot. It felt like an ending, definitely. Yeah, like it felt like, because I remember, I mean, Matt, you know, the unsurpassed and unsurpassable work of literature in this or any language, Paradise Lost, has an ending that feels like an ending, as was thoroughly pointed out to me by my professors, right? Like, hand in hand with Wandering Steps and Slow, right? Through Eden took their solitary
right.
way.
Yeah, absolutely. They hand in hand with Wandering Steps and Slow through Brisbane took their solitary way, right? Mm-hmm.
Like, period, end of sentence, end of line, end of book, end of right. Paradise Lost, right? And there's a way that feels like the end, more than just that it is the end of the story, where the events have come to a conclusion. You know, there's a cadence to it, there's a euphony to it, it has a vibe that it's the end. And it felt like this episode had that vibe that it was the end. And even at the point where it was like, it's ending, and then it sort of, in the last minute, changes how it's ending and then ends again, felt like a sort of ornamental cadence, right, at the end of a hymn, right, where it's like, duh, da-da-da-da, like, and it sort of ends, like, with this sort of other ending that they just came up with. It's got a little bit of Return of the King going on. But it wouldn't feel like they were having a second ending if it hadn't felt first like they were having a first ending, I guess.
Just to be clear, what's the first ending you're talking about versus what's
the first ending is when they all get in the car and they're going to leave. And the second ending is when, well, no, they all get in the car and they're all going to leave, and Bannock gets out and he looks at the side and he looks at his family, and it's like, that could be the end of the story, right? Or he just drives off. That's the end of the story. And then when it's like, oh, he's pulling the thing out, they're going back, and then when they go back into the house, because it doesn't end when they all rush up and give him a hug. If it ended when they all rush up and gave him a hug, it wouldn't feel like the ending. It would feel like, oh, they're introducing a new thing. But it's because they then go back into the house, right? They do that, right? At the end of the
episode?
They do.
They definitely do. Yeah.
And they,
yeah,
and they have like, a second ending. A picnic on a cardboard box on the on the floor of the house.
Yeah. Yeah, they bother to have a celebration scene at the end, right? Like it ends with a marriage, I suppose, to an extent, as in like they're married to their home. So that feels like an ending to me. And I would not be surprised. I would not have been surprised if that was the end of Bluey, period. But it seems like, well, obviously another episode came out today. So no, it's not. And they got a lot of this stuff happening, and I don't know what they have happening. Is there going to be a movie? Are they going to do a Paw Patrol crossover? What would you want Bluey to cross over with? If you could, Pasha and the Bear, maybe? Maybe just one of those videos from Thailand where people open eggs and yell about the things that are inside of them over and over again.
I want it to be Teen Titans Go, where the calm, the really like chill vibes of the Blue, you know, of the healers, just heals all the Teen Titans in Teen Titans Go. Yeah, that's I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Did it feel like an ending to you?
Yeah, for all the reasons that I described, right? You're kind of like, you know, my own personal narrative for this. And like in particular, right, like again, this kind of goes back to the very like dream like quality of the end, and like how it's like it's almost like too perfect at the end. Like the sun is setting just right, right? That magic hour glow sets upon the family, and then from there twilight descends and the camera pans up to the stars, right? Again, like I don't want to make this like this dumb, you know, thing like, you know, they've all died to go to heaven or bandits in a coma kind of thing, but it all felt like elevated from what we typically see in the show, and like very specifically composed in a way that's like, you know, we have said everything that we could possibly say with the show, and here it is, and it is beautiful, and that's all you're going to get. I feel like I wouldn't be so sad if that would have been the case. I guess to the point of the show, right? You know, like we're going to find out, right? You know, the thing that might be bad might seem like good, and the thing that seems good might turn out bad, right? They're going to do that with the show. They're gonna keep it going, and we'll see if they, you know, die young enough to be the hero, live long enough to become the villain. No, that's a terrible thing to think about this lovable family of cartoon dogs. That's not gonna happen, right? Is there gonna be heel turn for the healers?
Surprise! The heel turns. I love that. I guess in surprise the time jump. Is this the first time that's happened in the show, Mark?
It hasn't. No, it's been at least like two or three different times.
Oh, where they just
like this is where the you get glimpses of the characters as they're older.
Got it. And
probably quite a bit older. Yeah.
So okay, it's like our good parenting works. You know, it worked. our children are well adjusted, independent, enjoying their lives, fully individuated. You know, and yet they enjoy on occasion coming home to see mom and dad, and that's and we all come together and have a beautiful Thanksgiving or whatever they have in Australia, and no one yells at anybody. Nobody, you know, I don't know, like throws the pumpkin pie against the wall. No one throws a pumpkin pie against the wall, and that's beautiful. Okay, that's nice. Good for them. It's nice. Good for them. Good for you. Good for you. It's nice. Your family seems nice. Good for you. You know, what do you think? You're better than me? Yeah. So, so the time jump isn't something to like read into as this is the end of the show.
You mean the time jump in Surprise?
In Surprise, yeah.
I thought you meant, does the sign feel like the end of the show? I was saying the sign feels like the end of the show. Surprise doesn't feel like the end of the show at all. Surprise doesn't feel like an ending.
Oh, really? I didn't, I never jumped in after I listened to you guys talk about it before in the episode that never happened, since this is the first time that we're talking about Bluey. But to me, like, jumping into the future, you know, it has a kind of an end of the movie thing, like, right, like fade to black, and then like a title card that says like 15 years later, you know, hey mom, that was the thing. But it turns out that's a move that they pull all the time.
I wouldn't quite say all the time. And the other thing I would add as well is that this, the amount of time that and the emotional beats that we feel in this flash forward state are quite a bit more than what we've seen, for whatever it's worth, which may not be a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, surprise. Speaking of surprise, like I thought that the interesting thing to me was that the dad continued abiding by the sort of arbitrary rules of his kids' games when he was out of earshot, you know, or maybe the lesson is that you're never actually out of earshot. You think you're out of earshot, but you're not. And that's like, you know, they can hear you.
I mean, it's
like,
I buy that.
You're not singing to soothe the tennis ball. Yeah. Anyway, so there you go.
Well, cause you don't want them to freak out. You don't want them to start crying if they find out that you're not doing the thing that you said that you would do. Right. I mean, Mark, do you deal with that too? Where it's like, you have to make, if you make a promise, you better keep that promise.
Yeah.
Because if they find out that you broke it, it's very upsetting.
Yes. All that. But the other thing to add is just in terms of like the show and its frames of reference and, you know, why we see the adults playing along with the game to very extreme levels. Like it is very, I'm pretty sure it's intentional in terms of like calling into question, like, or just not calling the question. Highlighting that what you are seeing, it switches subtly and not always explicitly from the child's point of view to the parent's point of view, right? Especially with the games and imagination and all these rules, you know, like, oh, like all of a sudden, you know, like you're an animal, or your hand weighs 1,000 pounds and it slams onto the floor and you can't pick it up. It's like, well, of course they can pick it up, but the parents are playing along with it to like a very heightened level. And it goes back again to the episode of the episode of The Sign, right? Where you know, the children's point of view, or at least like the aim of a show with a children's point of view, ultimately wins out in the end, where they stay, where like this great rupture does not happen, at least kind of explicitly. So again, that's why I think maybe I'm more comfortable with how the show ended than you guys are.
Mm.
That makes sense. The one that I saw that made it feel familiar was the cricket game one with the dad in the army, where he like they show the flash forward to him being a cricket star. And it's like, yeah, the show isn't going to continue from the future with this kid as a cricket star. Right? Like this is not a permanent time jump forward. Right? Like it's... this is not a cricket show now. They're going to have a different topic for the next episode.
Maybe that's what season 4 is going to be. It's just going to be all cricket, all cricket material, you know,
I mean, in all seriousness, like you wonder, right? You know, this is like probably the big question they're wrestling with here. Like, do they stick with the core of the show as it's been? Do they do something very different? Do they start doing spin-offs, right? There's lots of characters with lots of different families. Do you have a Bluey cinematic universe, essentially? And endeavoring for so much growth, would you lose something along the way?
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough because you're making a show, right? Because you're making a show and the show must go on, and the show kind of abides. Well, maybe the show doesn't have to go on because it's Australia and apparently you could just stop doing your job and you'll be fine. In Australia, there are people who have that kind of problem. Certainly, if there's a group of people that don't fear losing their job, it's TV writers, right? Like, they have no anxiety about these things. But yeah, it's like, if the show must go on, which maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Or, I mean, I guess I could see it two ways. One is like, well, we're making Bluey. Bluey is really successful. This could be steady work for all of us. This is also a really beloved property. There's all sorts of stories we could tell. There's no reason to stop, right? Or we were really successful doing this. There are all sorts of doors open to us now that weren't open to us before because we have the bona fides of having done this. Now I can actually go and do the thing that I wanted to do, which, believe it or not, was not the cartoon show about talking dogs, right? Like, because who knows what the creators actually wanted to do. Mark, in the Bluey fandom, which, of course, I'm assuming you're now a very enmeshed member of, are the creators of Bluey, like, personages? Do we, like, know who's responsible for it or what they're like? Because I've read a little bit of commentary online, and I never see anybody really discuss.
So you're like,
anybody responsible for Bluey?
Who are the Dan Harmons of Bluey? Is what you're saying, right?
Like, yeah. Like the Paw Patrol guy invented Bakugan or something crazy like that. Right? He's like, it's like he did it for the toys, and it's like, okay, I get how he operates. Like, I get his sort of mentality, right? He has these like principles of what kids like, and he makes in integrated television and toy entertainments. To do that, which are like light ripoffs of other things that exist. But anyway,
the answer to your question is that the short answer is yes. Like, you know, I haven't like read every, you know, interview and, you know, analysis of the creator's intentions and all that kind of stuff. But like the there's a guy, right? His name is Jeff Bush, I think. And he is, you know, cares a lot, not surprisingly, and is very intentional about what he's created and is concerned about its future. So that's part of the meta narrative here, right? I mean, it's about guys, it's about growing up.
Oh,
that's what it is.
Well, I think we have to end this episode without having really come to any particular conclusion or catharsis. I think that's appropriate given the source material sign that we've been talking about. So, thanks everyone for listening. Pete and Mark, thanks very much for podcasting with me. Thanks for not calling off the wedding, guys. And thanks for bringing your A-prime plot around to my A-plot, which was mostly about spiders, I guess, and stomping on them and spearing them and how they provide economic opportunities for all the people of Australia. Okay, we'll be back with Overthinking It, more Overthinking It podcast next week. We'll see. Until then, you can visit us on the web at overthinkingit.com, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny.
It probably doesn't
deserve.
Wait, this podcast isn't over. I'm ripping off this sign. This is, the podcast is over.
Mark, you're going to throw your back out.
Oh no.
God.
I can't move.
If only we could sell the podcast.
We're going to move to Western Australia and make a lot more money, guys. Yay!
Doing literally anything else.